is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. NATO, much in the news. The meeting in Brussels, the presentation by the Allies against Russia and China. NATO, at this point, entertaining how it will continue to support Afghanistan after the withdrawal of combat troops. NATO also standing up against Ukraine and interested in expanding its missions. Well, one mission NATO has had for several years, I learned from Gregory, is Operation Gordian Knot. Gordian Knot 2019, Gordian Knot 2020, now Gordian Knot 2021. Gregory, a very good evening to you. What is Gordian Knot 2021 entertaining, and how does this connect to the Nile River? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Exercise Gordian Knot 2021, like the two predecessors in the two previous years, is a NATO exercise, basically a special forces exercise. And for these past 3 years, or including this year, it's focused on a simulation of an attack by NATO special forces in the Upper Nile regions at the source of the Blue Nile, which is Lake Tana in Ethiopia, as a means of controlling the outflow of the Blue Nile, presumably. Now, this is an exercise which simulates support for the Egyptian government, because the Egyptian government has made it clear that it is ready to go to war with Ethiopia for control of the waters of the Blue Nile, which provide the bulk of the waters coming down into Egypt and are required by Egypt. So it's basically, in a sense, signaling that NATO and the United States are planning to support Egypt militarily, to bring Ethiopia to its knees and to submit to whatever Egypt wishes to do to it in order to get the waters of the Blue Nile to flow down to Egypt. This is entirely contrary to the neutral or honest broker position which the United States put itself in trying to resolve differences under Treasury Secretary Mnuchin during the Trump administration, when the suggestion was that the U.S. would help to sort out the differences between Egypt and Ethiopia amicably, so that all of the parties to the Blue Nile discussions could resolve their differences and achieve not only peace but prosperity.
I'm struck by the fact that NATO's mission can include the Horn of Africa, which is what we're talking about, and an ongoing conflict in Ethiopia against a rebellion, a reorganizing of the whole region around a reunited Ethiopia with Eritrea, and picking sides with Egypt. Now, there's another state involved here that is a member of NATO, Turkey. What stake does Turkey have in NATO choosing to side with Egypt?
Well, Turkey's role is going to be interesting, because this is the Southeastern Europe Thessaloniki base for this NATO exercise. I'm not sure that Turkey is going to be involved, because let's face it, the Greeks don't want the Turks involved. But Turkey does have a stake in what's going on in particularly Ethiopia and Somalia and Eritrea at the moment, and it's trying to influence that. It's been supporting a lot of anti-government rebel groups in the region, particularly the Oromo Liberation Front, which has also been supported by Egypt. So at this stage, Egypt and Turkey have competing but, in fact, similar goals in trying to control Ethiopia. Now, Turkey would like certainly to exercise influence in Ethiopia and use that to put pressure on Egypt, so that Egypt will restore its Muslim Brotherhood government, or at least restore the Muslim Brotherhood to legitimacy and legality in Egypt.
So Turkey, as a member of NATO, is nominally supporting Egypt, in that NATO is supporting Egypt in its conflict with Ethiopia. This has to do with the waters of the Nile, as I've learned from you. Ethiopia is building the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, shortly G-E-R-D, the GERD. However, there is a report you bring to my attention at the Atlantic Council that argues that Egypt's troubles about a shortage of water are not based upon the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. What is causing the water shortage in Egypt?
Well, a couple of things, really. But the dominant one is the rise in Egypt's population. Egypt now has about 100 million people. This is dramatically more than the period under, say, Gamal Abdel Nasser in the 1950s, when you had less than half that population. So what we have now is a situation where several things prevail. Firstly, you've got more people in Egypt, double the number that you had a half century ago. You've got more urbanized population, which means that they're demanding more water, and they're also a more prosperous people. So more prosperous urban people want foods which are heavily water dependent. So the demand for meats, for example, which are highly, you know, water based in their upbringing, are profound. So the demands on the Nile have been exploding exponentially with population growth and population wealth, to the point where Egypt now is in trouble. And of course, there is a drought underway as well, which means that this year the water flow from the Nile is decreasing. So the Egyptian public want answers and they want their water, and the Egyptian government's got to find a scapegoat. Now, the reality is that despite the fact that the Egyptian government feels that the GERD dam is going to take water from the flow of the Blue Nile, in reality, it will not. It's certainly there's a hiccup while the dam fills, but in reality, it's not stopping the flow. And Egypt already has this gigantic dam, the Aswan High Dam, in up near the Sudanese border, which has created Lake Nasser, which is this vast lake which has water backing up in it. So theoretically, Egypt could be releasing more flow out of the Aswan Dam. Problem is that the Aswan Dam is a very imperfect engineering structure put in by the Soviets, and it's been actually filling with topsoil from the Abyssinian highlands, the Amhara highlands around Lake Tana, which each year would bring down, with the annual flooding, bring down topsoil from Ethiopia and deposit it down the Nile, particularly in the Nile Delta near the Mediterranean. And this made Egyptian farming extremely productive because these were very fertile soils. But once Lake Nasser was created behind the Aswan Dam, those soils just dropped behind the Aswan Dam. So you're getting less productivity out of Egyptian agricultural lands. Yes, you've stopped the annual flooding of the Nile and all of the problems that would periodically cause, but you're also increasing the water table because you've got a constant flow of water going down the Nile, which is actually building up the water table. And so now you've got a higher water table in Lower Egypt, and that is actually flooding into a lot of the great archaeological resources, some of which have not yet been exposed to the public, including the great maize structure, which was only rediscovered a few decades ago. So Egypt is suffering from agricultural shortfalls. It's suffering from damage to its historical infrastructure, which is, of course, the source of Egypt's uniqueness and its tourism appeal. And it's getting to the stage where it's not managing its irrigation projects from the Nile very well. So all in all, Egypt's agriculture is declining as a percentage of its GDP, and this is, and therefore its food supply. So it's becoming critical. So you've got real problems there for the Egyptian economy, which can't seem to be addressed by normal ways. Egypt certainly is now looking at massive desalination of waters from the Red Sea and or the Mediterranean. It's looking at getting nuclear reactors to help provide the energy to do that. But in the meantime, there are clearly going to be hiccups, and someone has to be blamed. And so President Sisi has no one to blame but the Ethiopians. So he enlisted the help of his international partners, like the United States, in negotiating a punishment of the Egyptians, of the Ethiopians, so that he could be seen to be doing something. Now, as I say, the reality is that whatever he does with Ethiopia is not going to improve the flow of water down the Blue Nile.
Gregory, so, why does NATO side with Egypt? Why don't they go to an arbitration or in some way a transnational organization? If this is truly about water, Egypt should make its case before a board to review it. Ethiopia can make its case that the dam is necessary for power. Ethiopia wants to grow. It needs power.
Yes, absolutely correct. And the reality is that Egypt is saying we must take this to the UN. And this is echoing something which Secretary of State Antony Blinken has said. We want to take this to a Security Council vote so that we can intervene in the internal affairs in Ethiopia with forces. And they're using not only the Nile dispute, but the allegations of civil war in the country.
Well, well and good, but why side with Egypt? That's the puzzle here.
Well,
Egypt is not a growing force in the neighborhood, as I recall. It imports 40% of its food. It's dependent upon its neighbors, not conquering its neighbors.
Yes, but it controls the Suez Canal linkage between the Mediterranean and the Red Sea and Indonesia. So therefore, it's the guardian of one of the most important sea routes in the world. Now, that's all well and good. And we saw, you know, just how critical this was to Egypt when we saw the motor vessel Ever Given run aground in the Suez. So that held up world trade and cost billions or many, many billions. So everyone's saying, well, we must protect Egypt. And there's also a great source of Oriental romanticism in the State Department, just as there is in the foreign
Council. The Atlantic Council is, as you report correctly, entirely conversant with NATO. They exchange. This is a think tank for NATO. The Atlantic Council has produced a report, you quote from it, that says that the trouble for Egypt is not based upon Ethiopia building a dam. It has to do with management of its resources, with increasing demand because of prosperity, and also because Egypt has not invested in workarounds for the declining agrarian base. Now, the Atlantic Council publishes that. Doesn't NATO read its own report?
Well, yes, but the political leaders have agendas of their own. And this view that Cairo is the goal. We must control Cairo. You know, France, the Ottomans did it, the French did it, the British did it, the Americans did it, the Soviets did it.
I see.
The reality is that when President El-Sisi kicked out the Americans a few years ago during the Obama period, it was basically on the terms, we don't need a foreign superpower controlling us, and you're out, and we're not going to ask you back in. Washington doesn't seem to understand that. So they're all trying to get back into influence and control in Cairo. It's not going to happen. They do it on the basis that it's important for the U.S. and NATO to ensure a clear path through the Red Sea, Suez, Sealac.
Right. However,
if they control Egypt at the cost of Ethiopia, then what will happen is that Ethiopia can and probably will respond and cut off the sea
trade. And they will have damaged the growth of the Horn of Africa, which is an extremely needy and growing population. You said when you reported to me that Ethiopia and Eritrea put together 120 million people. That's more people than there are in Egypt right now. Gregory Cox.
Correct.
We have to turn to NATO back in Brussels. Let's go back to Europe, Gregory. We'll come back to the Nile soon enough. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.